Good morning. I'm your host, Claudia Shambaugh, welcoming you to the February 15th, 2022 edition of Ask a Leader. Today, we'll start with Neil Kelly, retiring Orange County Registrar of Voters, who give us an exit interview. And other platforms are already doing this, but I'm happy to do it my way. Sad to see it be the last time with him. My second guest is Mai Tran, communication strategist for Stop the Music, speaking about the conditions in Orange County Sheriff Barnes jails. Of central concern is how the food served there is confounding health problems. We'll be right back. Well, welcome back to the show. My first guest is Registrar of Voters since 2005, Neil Kelly. And this is, as I said, this is the exit interview, folks. He's the Registrar of Voters for Orange County, the fifth largest voting jurisdiction in the U.S., serving more than 1.8 million registered voters and growing. And I just want to go give the long form introduction because this is the heft, this is the mantle institutional knowledge that is handing it over to Mr. Page at the very end of the month and effective the middle of next month. Neil has served and has led the office through the largest cycle of elections since Orange County was founded in 1889. In his role as the county's chief executive official, he's led an organization responsible for conducting elections, verifying petitions, maintaining voter records, more of concern since the persistent disruptions following the 2020 general election. To date, Neil Kelly is the longest serving registrar in the county and among the most senior election officials in California. He is a certified elections and registrar administrator, the United States Election Assistance Commission Board of Advisors. He as well been serving on as president of the California Association of Clerks and Election Officials and the National Association of County Recorders, Election Officials and Clerks. In these positions, Neil's not only looked upon as a seasoned administrator, but an expert in implementing process reforms that benefit election workers and voters alike. We've seen that in some super innovative pop-ups and ways to extend the let's get habitual voter arm to students alike, so which are at this campus at UCI. At the time of his appointment, there were a few policies and procedures in place to ensure effective coordination between the polling places and later key election offices. And so in some jurisdictions, informal procedures may meet the demands of smaller electorate, but in Orange County, any given election conducted prior to 2020 required effective coordination between, count them folks, 1,000 to 1,200 polling places and 10,000 volunteers. This required not only extensive logistics and coordination, but well-established procedures for communication between poll workers and leadership in central offices. He's been the recipient of numerous state and national awards. In the interest of time, we're going to go on to that he is a former appointee and founding member of the U.S. Department of Homeland Security Election Security Task Force, where he helped oversee the protection of the nation's election infrastructure on their board of advisors. And he's a member of the Election Assistance Commission Voting System Standards Board and former member of the Technical Guidelines for the EAC. In addition, he served as member of the 2018 National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine's Committee on the Future of Voting. Neil has been invited to testify before the committees, the U.S. House, the U.S. Civil Rights Commission, the Presidential Commission on Election Administration, several state legislative bodies, and both federal and state courts. Actually, there's lots of others that I know on background. So I provide the long introduction in order to take full stock of the substantial mantle of electoral machinery administration on Neil's shoulders as he bids us adieu March 11th. Neil comes to us today from his corner office in Santa Ana. Welcome back to Ask a Leader, Neil.
Thank you, Claudia, so much. Good to be here.
Well, first, this isn't going to be the typical exit interview, and my listeners know that by now. So, Neil, your retirement, it's in the middle of the Great Resignation. Help us understand how you wanted to wrap this duty in your multi-phase professional life that include law enforcement and business. It's 17 years, though, after serving in this capacity as Orange County Registrar of Voters.
Wow, that's a lot to take in, because I've been thinking about that a lot myself. You know, I was looking at exiting from my position at the end of 2020 after the presidential elections and the move to vote centers, and had a little bit of time in between that and 2021, and then the state recall started to pop up, and suddenly we had a statewide governor recall. And I didn't want to leave the county at that time. I didn't think that was appropriate. I wanted to stick it out and to lead the agency through that very large election that happened last year. And so the timing is just right, you know, for me right now. There are a lot of my colleagues, as you pointed out, that are resigning across the country for a number of different reasons. I'm not leaving because of some of the reasons they are. You know, many of my colleagues have had threats. They have been frustrated with the tenor of where we're at in this country in terms of dialogue. But for me, I'm leaving just because I think it's time, you know, to spend some time with my family and time for myself.
Well, a lot of, as you said, there's a lot of public servants around the country that they've left. And I think we can see that you haven't shied away from the other challenges. And you've talked about in previous interviews here on KUCI about strange curveballs thrown your way. They're kind of drains on your administering, drains on your bandwidth just to get your regular job done. There's lots of odd challenges coming from right and left field. So it's you've maintained that for some time. So after, Neil, you announced your retirement last fall, was the search process for your replacement. Talk about, Neil, the extent to which you were involved in hiring Bob Page from San Bernardino County. And I'm thinking in the back of my head, actually it was the front, that the Orange County Board of Supervisors, their means for replacing Dr. Nicole Quick when she resigned in June 2020 from the healthcare agency for Orange County, that was a precedent of the kind of appointment making that was making us wonder, like, how is this going to work for the Orange County Registrar Voters replacement? So how involved were you, Neil, with getting Mr. Page in this position?
Well, you know, one of the things I wanted to say first was many of my colleagues in Orange County department heads, you know, that they retire, resign, et cetera, and they don't necessarily leave a lot of notice when they leave. And what I wanted to do was to make sure that I gave 6 months to the county, because the county, I actually feel very blessed to have worked for Orange County. I love this organization, and I felt like I owed back to them. And so I wanted to make sure we had time for a transition, and especially with, you know, Claudia, as you know, with elections in 22 and 24 and the way they're shaping up, to really be able to help guide the new individual coming in and to assist them. But to the extent that I had a hand in hiring Mr. Page, I didn't. You know, that was the purview of the CEO. That was his decision, and that process was out of
Mr.
my hands.
Kim?
What I did have a hand in was working with the recruiters and working with the executive team on, you know, what does the recruitment look like? How do we reach out to individuals? How do we cast a wide net? So I was very involved from that standpoint, but the actual selection process, I wasn't.
So that was Frank Kim, the CEO of the
right,
right. But he was involved with replacing Dr. Quick, and so that's where a lot of us wanted to know about the kind of autonomy that an administrator would have with it's become very politicized, the Orange
sure.
County Board of Supervisors. And on background, I understand the pool, you know, there's a lot of disincentives to running Registrars of Voters office. So the pool probably was smaller than it would have been maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
That's very true. You know, there are, and the concern that I have is with if this sort of attack on our democracy continues moving forward, there's going to be less people that want to come in that are in a talented pool. And if you think about it, there's only 58 of us in the state of California. There's only 58 counties. There's one registrar per county. That's a very small pool just in California, let alone the country. So you're right. I mean, it is small to draw from, but even though that is a small pool, there's a lot of talented folks out there.
So Bob Page's, his employ is effective on February 25th, but you are going to be, your resignation being effective on, or retirement. I think retire is the word, not resignation.
Retire, yeah.
It's it's a big, that's a huge difference.
Right.
So he's going to have some time with you, and I just checked, I did my own research, isn't that, that's like such a toxic line to say, but so San Bernardino, amazingly, it's the 14th most populous county in the U.S., so in terms of comparable kinds of workload for Mr. Page, it's not, I mean, it's from 14th most populous to the 5th most populous jurisdiction in the country. That's now, and you're saying like the pool is really, it may always be an inside kind of California job unless there are comparable kinds of administrations in out of state, but it's going to mainly be, it would be mainly Californians that understand all of the minutiae here. So talk about, as they say, I've grown accustomed to your face, your high standards of management. How are you going to transition and offer that? We're going to, we'll first talk about him, and then we'll talk about institutionally all those relationships you've had all around the country.
Well, I mean, you know, Bob comes to us from San Bernardino, as you mentioned, which is a large county. It is about almost half the size of registered voters and half the size of the staff. So, you know, he'll be scaling up to come into Orange County, but he can use those same tools that he uses in San Bernardino to transfer over. I have run a little over 90 elections here in Orange County and about 20, 25 recounts and handled close to 20 million ballots in the production and tally and mailing, et cetera. Bob has much less experience, but that doesn't mean that he can't come in with those skill sets to be able to pick up and move forward. I think the thing for me, Claudia, is going to be really sort of setting what are these priorities that are out there for the county, what are the things that are right in front of us as an agency that we need to deal with immediately.
Okay. And what are they?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. So, you know, the longer term is how do we deal with misinformation and communication with the voters? Because that trust continues to be eroded, although, you know, people talk a lot about 2020 doing that, but I saw that happening years before that, when we had congressional seats switched to blue and we had registration change, et cetera. So that's been going on for some time. It's just more amplified. So that's number one. Number two is, you know, being a good steward of what we've done with vote centers, because San Bernardino County is not a vote center county, and he'll need to come in and come up to speed on that. It's very different when you're comparing polling places versus vote centers and how they operate. So there's a lot to transfer over in terms of knowledge, but I've been spending months on just preparing briefing packets, et cetera. And so once I do have that time to meet with him, you know, we'll transfer a lot of information.
Well, the question begs to be asked is the kind of personnel changes. I don't know if there's been, I mean, I only know of one person that has resigned within the last couple of years that I used to work with a great deal in setting up interviews and going to different press events at the Orange County Registrar of Voters. So what kind of needs are there to keep staff there, recruit new staff, just so that everybody is filling all those essential slots at the Orange County Registrar of Voters, Neil?
Yeah, that's going to always be a challenge. The market right now, the labor market is difficult. You know, there's a lot more people that want to work from home. There are more people that I don't think want to come back to the workplace necessarily. So that's tough. And then to maintain talent, you know, is very difficult. I've got a really good team here. I'm proud of them and the work that we've done. It's taken time to build that. That didn't happen overnight. And to get a roster, you know, where we have good folks ready to handle every election that comes in is tough. Every county's facing that. You know, we hire about 2,500 people to work the vote centers. Now, we've already started that recruitment for June, and that is, we're just facing an uphill battle because of all of the competition for those folks. I mean, as an example, when Amazon is hiring people at a much higher rate than we can hire for a short period of time, you know, there's competition. So it makes it tough.
Well, that's a sobering kind of observation that when we've grown so accustomed to your capacity to steer this unwieldy kind of a job through. And so I'll ask about what's on us to, you know, in terms of either the voting population and the volunteers and all that would help it. But first, I'm going to stay with the office, though. You're handing a great deal off to Mr. Page, the June 7th primary in registrar voters sort of calendar terms, is that's not far off. You've probably built a great deal, but I don't know, Neil, so maybe you could talk about what you've built and graph it. So how steep does the climb start getting toward getting June 7th up and ready?
I will tell you that it's going to be a little bit more of an uphill battle for the general election, because what I have done is I have teed up as much as possible, including already doing some production work for the June 7th primary. So when Mr. Page comes in, my goal was to have as turnkey of an operation for him to be able to have a little breathing room for the primary, and then, you know, he'll have to really dive in for the general. So we have, I mean, Claudia, you know, candidate filing closes just in a couple of weeks, and so we have done a lot of preparation, including inventory, recruitment, supplies, et cetera, to be able to be prepared for that primary. I don't want to walk away and say good luck. So we have prepared just like I was going to be here.
Okay. Well, I'm sure that the image still keeps coming to my mind, Neil. It's the person, that's us, that are just like holding on to your ankle and trying to keep you from walking out the door there. So, and so you were so innovative, and you are. You know, you had that pop-up outside the Hamilton performance for early voting and registration. I mean, you were doing all those things, but do all of those amazing innovations just go to the sort of standard way of doing elections? Or sometime after the general election 2022 is when we can see Mr. Page sort of spread out and do those enterprising things?
Yeah, I think you'll probably have a little bit of time in between that. I'm not sure, you know, what will remain. Obviously, I have a desire for a lot of the things that we put in place, and we've done a lot of innovative things, as you pointed out, that are very different from other counties. And I like to say, well, maybe my family does. Maybe I'm a little sick in the head because I'm OCD, and I'm very focused on the voter experience and what we can do to keep improving. And some administrators are, you know, let's kind of keep the status quo. That's never been my style. I can't operate that way. So I can't tell you exactly what Mr. Page is going to do, but I can tell you that the team here is solid, and my hope is that those things will continue.
Well, and another thing that we talk about this for many of the interviews is you actually see the upside of poll watchers, extra eyeballs on the election day. I don't know if poll watchers just turn out on election days, but are you going to talk with Mr. Page about the importance of poll watchers? Because not everybody in your capacity sees them as an asset the way you have.
You're right. They do not. And I'm certainly going to, you know, share my knowledge of that with Bob. And my understanding from him is, you know, he's obviously focused on transparency, too, if you look at some of the things he's done in San Bernardino County. And the one thing that, you know, we need to understand and acknowledge is that San Bernardino County is very different from Orange County in terms of population density, how voters, you know, interact with the office, the communication. It's very different. I mean, you're in the Southern California media market, really, in Orange County and L.A. County. You're not so much in San Bernardino and Riverside, as you know. So there's very big differences between the two counties. But again, you know, I want him to be successful, and we're going to work to make sure he is.
So for those of you who've just joined us, my guest is Neil Kelly, Orange County Registrar of Voters, as he winds down his career in that capacity here in Orange County, effective March 11th. So what is our role, Neil, in terms of, I mean, I hope Mr. Page gives me regular interviews right before we have these elections like you have been since 2010. But what's our role, Orange County constituents, the Orange County government leadership, and others, to maintain the standards you've established?
Well, I think it's worth saying that it's, you know, you need to hold his feet to the fire. And I don't think that I wouldn't mind someone saying that to me if I were coming in, because I think that's very important. We've built an organization here that's the foundation of it is transparency and making sure that we have access and allowing people to observe, and all of the things that come along with that are really important for him to continue. And I think the media, government elected officials need to continue to hold this office to those high standards. And, you know, I think all of that group I just mentioned are very good at that.
Yes.
So that's what I see in the future.
So the state of election supervisors, the supervision, how, Neil, can, quote, election integrity, end of quote, be reappropriated away from the freight it's carrying these last 2 to 6 years?
Well, you know, that's probably the toughest question you've asked, because I'm not sure that that's going to happen in the short term, you know, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I really, you know, Justice Breyer spoke about this when he announced his retirement from the Supreme Court recently. He talked about the Great American Experiment and how we've talked about that since the days of George Washington. And we're still in an experiment when it comes to American democracy. And I have to tell you that I'm a little fearful for that, because we have got to, as election officials and the public at large, stay focused on making sure elections have integrity and that they're transparent and that people can view that and make their own decisions and understand the facts. We've strayed from that a bit. And, you know, I'm hoping we can rein that back in, but it's going to be tough.
Well, I mean, just to, like, use an analogy in this kind of topic, is that election integrity used to be like a white, mildly starched, pressed long-sleeve shirt, but it's like a bloody T-shirt now.
Good analogy. Yeah, I think you're right. It's taken a few hits over the last couple of years. But, you know, I'm hopeful. Even though I say that I'm a little concerned, I am hopeful for the future and that we can continue to make sure that there's not erosion that goes on to this process. Because if you lose trust, Claudia, if the electorate completely loses trust, you know, we're in a third world country. and I don't see that happening here in the United States. And so we just need to work together as not only members of the public, but election officials.
Okay, we're letting that sink in. It's incumbent on all of us, and I can hear you trying to sort of keep your cool about all this, but keeping one's cool is backed up with there's a lot of regular exercises keeping in tone to for all of us to stay with it. I'm sort of fooling around too many analogies here. So where are you going to be taking all this expertise, all your institutional knowledge? I'm imagining you as like a go-to consultant for managing elections, like big billable hours, or an A-list on a network news show. What do you envision yourself? We heard you on Larry Mantle talking about what you're going to do recreationally right after the 11th of March.
Right.
But I'm concerned about your institutional knowledge. What can you sort of share with us that you can see yourself doing in the future?
Well,
you're a young guy, Neil.
Yeah, and I appreciate that question. I do plan to stay involved, and just right out of the gate, there's several nonprofits and organizations that advocate in elections, and I plan to continue to serve on commissions and committees related to that. But the good thing is I can do that as a retired official, and I don't have that extra weight and burden of, you know, running the election as well. So I plan to participate that way, Claudia, for some time. There's a lot of good work being done that I'm going to continue to be involved with military voters and overseas voters, as well as misinformation, disinformation, and voting rights. And so that's kind of where my passion lies in the short term, and, you know, we'll see where life takes me.
Because it is, institutional knowledge in this sense is such a large asset, and Neil, you're a public good, is what.
Mm.
So maybe you'll keep, let me know how to reach you so you can give us maybe some commentary, you know, here on KUSI. But because there will be things to sort of shake down that are getting a little bit weird, a little bit distorted. So I heard about your, where you're going to go next to, you know, you talked about some kind of Mexican setting.
Well, I'm saying any beach with a cold beer. That's where I'm going to go right after retirement. How's that?
Yeah. Well, I'm so grateful for you're making yourself available for so many interviews since 2010. They were always timed to be right when you were getting your busiest. So it was the primaries and the general elections and last fall's election to recall whether or not to recall Governor Newsom. Neil, I thank you so much for taking the time, and goodness knows for your unflagging service.
Well, Claudia, I would take any time out of the day to talk with you. I think you're a great interviewer, and I really appreciate the time we've had together.
Well, thank you. And everybody knows where we're going to go with this. So, Neil, our ritual, every time we always end an interview with our pipe dream for 100% voter participation in the next election.
Wonderful.
Okay. Thank you so much, Neil, and good luck, and talk to you when we're compelled to be talking. Take care.
Absolutely. Talk soon.
Bye-bye. Right back with my Tron, and she's going to talk about the music, stop the music messages about what's happening with Sheriff Barnes' jails. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. My next guest is Maitron. She's communications strategist for Stop the Music Coalition to fill us in on the score of food in the jail here in Orange County. The LA Times editorial in January pointed out some foul stuff there, and we're going to put that in perspective today. My's written work on the criminal legal system has appeared in Prism, Mike, Auto Straddle, and elsewhere, and I've seen her helm the Stop the Music webinars, informing the public about how coalitions can improve conditions for those folks who are in detention in local facilities. And that's where we're going to start. So I want to welcome Maitron to Ask a Leader today.
Yes, I'm here.
So first, in preparation for this interview, I understood that language, it's very important when we speak of those whom are in detention. We all want to use the phrases that work best. And from the broader public, this population, it doesn't maintain very much sympathy. So we're going to talk about that, why using these phrases matter. And we'll then talk about the continuum of the different statuses of those that are in detention.
Yeah, at Stop the Music, we use people first language. So we'd say our incarcerated community members or neighbors or people in prison to avoid dehumanizing labels such as inmate or criminal, labels that define people by a single thing that they might have done. And if we're trying to build a care first community that doesn't rely on police, then that means reminding folks that we have to take care of all of our neighbors, including unhoused people and people who are in prison.
Well, thank you for that. And so, and further, really, literally, figuratively, fleshing out this population. So if you could also remind us, sometimes we lose track of what exactly is the status of those that are in this detention. So could you sort of kind of give us this continuum so people understand when you're in jail, it means many different things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, many of the people in OC jails are pretrial, and Black and brown people are disproportionately incarcerated in Orange County. Some of the top charges that people have are related to mental health needs, drug use needs, and technical violations of probation for entry into the U.S. without inspection. And people sometimes wait several years before receiving a trial, but regardless of whether or not someone's been convicted of something, access to healthy food is a basic human right, and people inside OC jails shouldn't have to be forced between choosing to eat moldy food or starving or food that makes them sick or food from the commissary store that's so upcharged that it becomes a financial burden for them and their families.
Okay, thank you. So, and the Stop the Music Coalition, I think it's important that we understand the sort of, this is the mantle you're bringing to exact accountability from the sheriff's office and the sheriff's the co-leaders, let's say, for one way of expressing, who are calling the shots in terms of appropriations and setting policy and that kind of thing. Briefly, just give us what Stop the Music is essentially trying to accomplish as we before we go into further details about the conditions in detention.
Yeah, Stop the Music is a coalition of about 15 different organizations in Orange County that include Food Justice, People's Budget, OC, Sunrise Movement, Yalla Indivisible, et cetera, that are all working to stop jail expansion in Orange County. One of our long-term goals is to stop the expansion of the James A. Music Facility on the border of Irvine, which would increase OC's jail population by about 3,000 jail beds at a time when people who are being convicted of crimes are dropping, and we are trying to increase alternatives to incarceration through a community and care first model, which means divesting from the police and investing in community services such as health care and mental health needs.
There was this particular myth that was being seeded around the country about harm reduction, and you're talking about, you know, care. So this massive rumor about, I don't want to give it amplification here, but it must have put more work on how harm reduction is something that is advancing, getting the rehabilitating people and protecting people. That it's not a matter of rehabilitating if you've only been charged, that you may be innocent, so that rehabilitation is not the thing. But this rumor that was mongered about what harm reduction meant on the federal level must have given you all a whole lot of extra work. You had enough as it was.
Yeah. The OC Board of Supervisors was marketing this new James A. Music Facility jail as a mental health facility, but we know that people, when they go into jails, they often don't receive mental health treatment, and there's no such thing as a quote-unquote mental health jail, because people who go into prisons often become worse and, you know, develop long-term issues that affect them even after they are released. So with this food issue that we're currently advocating about, people enter OC jails without any pre-existing conditions, but because of the food that they've been served when the OC Sheriff's Department closed the jail kitchen in March 2020, they haven't been being fed hot meals for almost 2 years now, and a lot of the food is moldy or rotten and very high in sodium. So people have been reporting being sent to the doctor and developing long-term health issues such as hypertension or heart disease that continue even after they're released. And one of our inside members, S, wrote that you can watch people becoming sicker. I've heard of the people who are becoming hypoglycemic or were told that they're in danger of thyroid disease because of weight gain. The food is so salty that my hands and feet feel swollen after eating. And we filed a PR report that found that meals served during the pandemic have twice as much sodium as the FDA's daily recommended amounts. So folks are losing weight inside, they're becoming sick, and people who can't afford to buy food from commissary to supplement the meals are especially having a hard time. And even if they could afford commissary, the only food that's sold there is things like ramen and cookies and Pop-Tarts. So a lot of people are having their health conditions exacerbated, or they're entering these prisons and developing health conditions that they did not previously have.
And that's really important to understand how confounding that part of the program is. It's making more grave a pre-existing condition or making someone less healthy at where they were healthy in the past. So it's sort of, we're working with a as I mentioned earlier, it's the population doesn't have a lot of sympathy outside of the detention areas. And so that's what I want to make sure we get done here is the understand of all kinds of people that are incarcerated, and it's a harm inflicted on them in the way, food, it's not like cabin service in the jail. It's like inflicting harm. So let's talk about what we do in terms of amplifying the holding accountable the sheriff. There's some dizzying, crazy sorts of things that go on with the county public forums. But what's an effective mm-hmm. thing for the grassroots response here?
Yeah, well, if we want to talk about why language is important, again, a lot of people are also being denied access to medical and religious diets, such as halal or kosher food. And when one person submitted a grievance about it, OCSD responded that all quote-unquote special diets are suspended because of the pandemic. And, calling medical and religious food a special diet makes it sound like OCSD is going out of its way to provide something special when it's really not a luxurious thing. It's just a basic necessity that's a fundamental part of people's cultural identity and spiritual practice. And not being able to partake in that can be extremely traumatic for people. And during the pandemic, OCSD saved $1 million in their food budget from closing their jail kitchen. Instead of spending that on food, OCSD has been rolling it over into their general budget to use for staff expenditures. And in 2021, they made $10.1 million in commissary sales alone. So they have the money to give people healthy food. They're just choosing not to. So with the food report that we released last December, we were calling on the OC Board of Supervisors to address this issue and audit and defund the Sheriff's Department. And the OC Democratic Party also recently passed an emergency resolution calling for the Board of Supervisors to agendize the food oppression in OC jails. And the LA Times editorial board also ran an article about why the food is a public health issue. They wrote that unhealthful, spoiled, or otherwise inadequate food in jails is inhumane and degrades not just the people who have to eat it. It is the public's responsibility to ensure that incarcerated people are not subject to this kind of mistreatment, which will have continuing health consequences. And with our last email action, over 85 emails were sent to the Board of Supervisors, and more than 25 comments were read aloud about the food oppression at the BOS meeting. And yet the OCBOS still has not agendized this issue. So now we are targeting OC Sheriff Barnes and Director of Custody Services, Greg Boston, to have them permanently reinstate hot meals and serve healthy food that people want to eat. And in the past, the Board of State and Community Corrections ended up investigating the food in OC jails and mandated that the sheriff add a hot item to breakfast and dinner, but the breakfast item was a very sad excuse for a hot cereal, and the dinner item was a lukewarm bowl of basically just broth with no nutrients in it, and it was also very salty. So historically, we know that OCSD will do not even the bare minimum to reach whatever standard they're told to meet, and as soon as people stop paying attention, they just go back to feeding people inedible food and food that makes them sick, which is why it's really important that community members continue to call and email in. So,
is there a good number? Do you have a number for us?
Yeah. We are launching an email action today on stopthemusic.net/reports or on any of our social media, where people can customize an email template to OC Sheriff Barnes demanding that people permanently reinstate full hot meals in OC jails. And Sheriff Barnes has full control over the meal plan. He made the decision to serve cold bologna, and he can change the meals very easily with just a phone call or email, and he has the money to do it. And other counties around us serve hot meals in their jails, so there's really no excuse for this to be happening. And to reiterate, the links for the email template can be found at stopthemusic.net/report.
Okay, but do you have that 714 number handy that people could call? Do you have the number?
Yes, let me pull it up really quickly.
Looking that up, I just want to let my listeners know my guest is Mai Tran, communication strategist for Stop the Music Coalition. It's a community with the goal of stopping carceral expansion in Orange County and reducing the jail population and the food there that is made available. I'm not even going to call it served, made available at the Sheriff Barnes jail facilities. So I want to know if you have any information about, you said $1 million was redirected away from the jail kitchen to the sheriff personnel, or what do you know how that million was spent in the general budget for the sheriff's office, or that it just goes into the general budget and there's no way to see that it would, whether it went to salaries or other kinds of things that we may or may not benefit from?
Yeah, a lot of the money that was rolled over was spent on staff expenditures instead of for people in prison, which is what it is intended for. And we also filed a PRA to see exactly what they are spending the money on. So there is not a clear way that they're auditing it currently, which is why we're also calling upon the OC Board of Supervisors to have more oversight around the OCSD budget, because they are not very clearly reporting what they are spending the money on.
Well, that's a real concern. That's part of the accountability that is incumbent of the sheriff. And I guess it's a little bit of an off-ramp, Mai, but we do have Orange County Board of Supervisors remapped the districts, the five districts. And when I go into primary coverage, I do try to interview lots of County Board of Supervisor candidates, because although they have their own constituents in their district, but they have so much power over their vote that obligates the whole county in terms of policy and appropriated funds. Are there candidates that understand, or any incumbents that understand the seriousness of this food situation in Sheriff Barnes jails?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are writing to Katrina Foley, particularly, who has been looking into the food in OC jails.
Okay, so are there any kinds of responses, but you were saying there's difficulty in getting some of these on the agenda for the Board of Supervisors meetings, but mm-hmm. is there any kind of reaction from there, and any strategy for getting this item into a kind of a talking point for candidates that are filing to run for the Board of Supervisors seats?
Yeah, we have a general coalition meeting on the last Thursday of every month. And this month's meeting on the 24th, we're planning on having a power mapping session if folks want to join to further strategize on which Board of Supervisors we can target. And I know Katrina Foley has been visiting the jails and looking into the food conditions there, but generally there hasn't been a response from the Board of Supervisors.
So it's a huge budget item. I want for listeners to hear where there's a diversion of funds, that's $1 million, and that you've talked about $10 million generated in commissary sales, where it's because of the poor food sorts of availability at the jail that it sort of incentivizes people to go to that in the commissary there. So those are big things that are, so is there anything that can be done in talking points about amplifying that diversion to a revenue sort of garnering kind of a commissary marketplace, as it were, in the jails?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the phone number to call Sheriff Barnes is 714-647-1805, and people can continue submitting public comment to the Board of Supervisors, which meets every other Tuesday, I believe, and call upon them to audit the Orange County Sheriff's Department.
Okay. So that number, we'll put that up in the podcast summary so people know where to call, and a link to the Stop the Music Coalition so people can follow the last Thursday of every month, including the February 24th meeting going into this. Well, that this has been such an extraordinary learning experience for all, vouch for myself as well. And I know listeners, it's a whole world opened up to them about people that, you know, we could exercise our Good Samaritan roles and seeing after people that are in detention who haven't been, they've only been charged, they haven't been able to pay their bail, or they have, there may be a conviction and they haven't been sentenced yet. So I want to thank you, Mai, for bringing this to our attention here on Ask a Leader today. And, you know, I want to wish you success in us raising our Good Samaritan game here countywide.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Thank you. My guest was Mai Tran. She's the communication strategist for Stop the Music Coalition, a community with the goal of stopping carceral expansion in Orange County and reducing the jail population. Well, that's my wrap. And for next week's show, Akash Maharaj, he's an ambassador at large with the Global Organization of Parliamentarians Against Corruption, and Brenda Lynn, Irvine Watchdog member, and they're going to connect some dots here, draw some through lines of corruption on the local to other much higher levels. So talk with you next week. Thank you, everyone, for listening.